Good morning and welcome to Chelan County Public Utility Board of Directors meeting, our regular commission meeting. Four commissioners are present today, which creates our quorum. And today, having the opportunity for, a couple of hearings, we certainly encourage the public to participate in our meetings and in particular on days when there are hearings. And so if you choose to address the commission, which we would encourage you to do so, please utilize the microphones that are at the table. Give us your name, your address, and we'll give you about 4 minutes to speak. And then once that opportunity rolls through, if there's a need for a second bite at the apple, we'll make sure that you have opportunity to express what your concerns are. But because our meetings are recorded, it's important that you identify who you are and your location, please. With that being said, also please put your phones in a position that's not going to cause any consternation in the room. And we're going to move ahead with our Pledge of Allegiance and our safety minute by Glenn Copeland.
Would everyone please rise and place the flag?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. My name is Glenn Copeland. I work at the Fiber and Telecom Department, the Principal Engineer. I've got a few props and some things to talk about today. And one of them fell off, of course. But try and put the number two right there. Safety is at the top of our values. See it on your cards here for a number one reason. Without safety, we can't do our jobs properly. Safety starts with you. The number one cause for emergency room visits in the Christmas time and the winter are slips and falls. That's how emergency rooms get full. First thing to be aware of is your surroundings. What is going on? Is it snowing, raining, is it icing? Look at a weather app that you may have on your phone. You'll be aware of the temperatures falling. I don't know if all of you felt the change in temperature this morning, but it was about 7 degrees colder. A lot of chance for ice on the roads and also on your doorsteps. Use additional support structures, handrails, other things that you may need to be able to get up or be able to help you support yourself when you're walking. Check the weather forecasts and watch for wet stairs or wet entrances in buildings, especially when it's snowing or raining. I've got three types of boots here that are typical for, might be used in winter wear, but which one would not be appropriate is what I would ask you for winter wear. Number three is right. The reason why, the slick bottom, it creates a slick surface and will slide very easily, creating that little bit of warmth, which will create a little bit of wetness and make it very slippery for someone to slide. The rest of these have appropriate soles for use in the winter time. This is not mine. But that's the safety minute for this for today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah, very timely.
Thanks, Glenn.
Glenn, I'm going to add one more boot. Yesterday, as I was out shoveling my 6 inches of snow at my house,
ooh,
I was unfortunately picked the wrong boot, not because it didn't have great traction, but because it was a Desert Marine Corps boot, and it was had Gore-Tex, which leaked. Yes. So my feet were soaked.
Yeah. And we all know if we've been in the service, wet socks, wet feet is not good.
Not good. Yeah. No, you're right.
Yes. Appropriately, don't keep wet stuff on because it could cause frostbite to happen more quickly.
That's right. Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you.
Not as you live in the outback or anything.
6 inches of snow.
Yeah.
Michigan.
I can see it from my house.
My car got stuck in my driveway.
There we go.
Thanks, Mark.
Let's take a look, gentlemen, at the approval of the agenda and any additions, corrections, or changes that you would consider making.
I would like to suggest that we move resolutions 14 and 15 to the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay. Been moved and seconded to move resolutions 14 and 15 to the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. And then strategic plan?
Yeah, I would like to spend a few minutes talking about strategic planning, particularly just to review with the commission the messages that we'll be delivering. So it's our intention to begin to get out in public and talk about this next round of strategic planning starting the middle of this month. So probably a good chance it may start before the next board meeting. We've been working on a document, which I know commissioners have been reviewing. We hope to have that finished by the end of this week so that we can make that available to the public. And then there's a PowerPoint presentation that we'd be using for meetings with the city councils, community councils, service organizations, others, just to make people aware that it's time to get going again on strategic planning. So I'd like to take a few minutes, because we haven't done this in public session, just to review the key things that we'll be covering in strategic planning. Candidly, one of the things that we're doing here is we're going to take a little bit of time on this, maybe one or two other items, but we're going to make sure that we can start the public hearings right at 10 o'clock. So if there are questions or issues that come up, probably just at 10 o'clock, defer them until a later point in the meeting. So we're going to do the same thing in this strategic planning exercise that we did in the last one, which is the beginning, the first month and a half or so, is really built around establishing the context, what's going on at the PUD today. We do that in a couple of days. First of all, starting with what's happened since the last strategic plan was adopted in 2015, compared against where we are now. Review some of our key metrics, both the key strategic planning objectives that we had, but also the four key metrics that we think measure any utility, which is rates, reliability, environmental stewardship, and customer satisfaction. And then the most important thing, I think, is reviewing what we've identified as the six key questions that we believe need to be addressed as part of strategic planning. Now, in this first 6 weeks, we'll be telling folks this is what we think are the six key issues, but taking input on whether there's agreement or whether they think there's something else that we should be addressing. In terms of reviewing where we've been, of course, we'll start with mission accomplished with respect to debt reduction, that we wanted to get to below 35% debt to equity ratio by 2019. We're finished with that a year early and believe we're on a path to be able to continue to reduce debt in 2019. We'll talk about the second key objective, which was investing in assets and people. And the basic conclusion there is it took us from starting on debt reduction from 2009 to 2018 to accomplish our goal. This goal we started in 2015, and we have a long way to go, is what we've uncovered. That we found more problems with the state of our assets than we knew back in 2015. Our asset management program is helping us to better understand the state of our assets. We know that this is going to be a task that's going to be included in the next strategic plan and will be one of the key objectives, is that we continue to need to invest in our assets and our people. We also do have individual development plans for all of our people at this point, but we are going to be focused a lot more on the human performance improvement initiative, trying to get to better operational excellence. The third key objective coming in the last strategic plan was initiating the public power benefit program. Will be a question here as to whether to continue that or not. Although one thing I think this board has made clear is that we will continue the expansion of the fiber program out to the 85 to 90%. Certainly the resources are there to be able to do that. We have gotten up to 74% of the county that is covered now, and you're going to be hearing more in this meeting today about our plans for 2019, the specific areas that we intend to address expansion. We also have added a section as a result of input from the board workshop to make sure that there is some recognition of the fact that we're in a rapidly evolving industry, that things are changing around us very quickly. Cryptocurrency is certainly the thing that has captured the attention of the county, but things that people don't see happening outside the county that are influencing us are these West Coast market changes, cybersecurity issues, renewable portfolio standards, whole bunch of things that while we're an island of relative stability, candidly, in the utility industry, There's a maelstrom going on around us, and that seeps into our county one way or another. So there is certainly a concern that we need to be adaptive and a culture that's ready to accept change in order to be able to reflect the forces that are going on around us. From a financial standpoint, it really is a different picture than the last strategic plan. That strategic plan indicated that our expected value was that we most likely could go forward without any borrowing all the way out through the 2020s. The rapid decline in the wholesale market and the reductions in our revenues as a result of that now put us in a position where our expected forecast is that we would be in the borrowing market by about 2022. Interestingly enough, when you have a big decline in wholesale market, it actually reduces your risk profile because how much further you can go down is not very far. So whereas the difference between our expected value forecast and our low forecast was substantial in the previous plan, it's gotten a lot smaller this time around. But still, when you start from a situation where you may be back in the borrowing market at 2022, there is a risk that we could be back in the borrowing market by 2021 or 2020 if we were to see the low prices continue or get worse. In terms of those four key metrics that I described, so of course our rates are outstanding. One-third the statewide average, and Washington State has among the lowest rates in the country, one-quarter the national average. So we start from a good position. If anything, our position has improved because we haven't had a rate increase going back to 9 years now. And our rates have only gone up a little bit less than 9% compared to a 42% increase of the consumer price index since 2000. So that gap actually between our rates and the statewide average and the national average, which is four times our rate, has actually gotten bigger over the course of the last 3 years. And I know that there was concern in the last strategic planning exercise that we heard from within the community about how big does that gap get and does that create a political risk for us. So to those who were worried about that, that gap has actually extended in the last few years. In terms of our reliability. We've worked on the metrics there, and our reliability is good, even very good, not as excellent as we would like it to be. Probably someplace in the second quartile, probably even top of second quartile, both in terms of our hydro system reliability. We'd like to get the capability of that system up and distribution system reliability. We have a lot of aging equipment, particularly underground cables that we think we're going to need to get after in the next few years to get that reliability up to the place where we'd like to be, which is, given our financial standpoint, we think we should be towards the top of the top. Environmental stewardship, two ways of measuring that. With a hydro system, the fundamental issue, of course, is not air emissions, but fish protection, and we are in full compliance with the Habitat Conservation Plan. I believe we can continue to be in full compliance. On the energy efficiency front, we have a statewide mandate to acquire energy efficiency, and we have achieved 92% above that statewide mandate. So we're close to doubling the amount of energy efficiency that we've acquired since 2015 relative to what the I-937 requirements would be. And finally, on customer satisfaction, our last customer survey, which of course was presented to the board in the spring, was that we have 97% of our customers who are satisfied or very satisfied with the service that we provide. We will talk a little bit about the fact that at the board workshop that we've made some changes to our mission, vision, and values, that the board has concluded that the mission statement should flip from what's behind Commissioner Smith up there, that we want to start with enhancing the quality of life in Chelan County, and we do that through providing sustainable, reliable utility services. We also are changing our values, our vision statement, to reflect what is over on that wall as opposed to what's on the wall behind Commissioner Smith. Focus on the best value for the most people for the longest period of time. And that in addition to that, we're adding into the vision statement that we know we have to respond to this rapidly changing utility environment that we're operating within. To reflect that, we had seven objectives under our vision statement that we have used to develop our performance plans. Three of those are changing. One of them is to add the word resilient to the provision that had us working on improving efficient, effective, compliant, and risk-assessed operations. So we're getting the resiliency theme in. We also have adopted as our goal with respect to our employees to be focused on this advancing human performance and operational excellence. And we have pulled the innovation concept out and made it a specific objective to focus on in terms of developing performance plans. And our values have been slightly modified, the same four values as we had before, but we're adding collaboration as a definition of trustworthiness, and we're adding taking personal accountability as an element of operational excellence. Both things that I think have been items that the board has asked us to pursue in the past, but we're making that explicit in terms of the way that we're defining the values that we're using. So that brings us up to what we think are the key questions. So what is it that we're focused on for the next few years? Number one is, what should we do with rates? So we have gone through this long period of not having rate increases. We probably are in a position from a cash perspective that we could survive without a rate increase in the near term. But it raises the challenge of when only 20% of your revenues that are controllable through rates, if you were to find yourself in a position where the wholesale market declined substantially and rapidly, you could be confronted with large double-digit rate increases. So should we take action earlier than might be required in order to make sure that we have a more steady approach to rates, more stable, which our customers have continuously expressed a preference for? So that will be one of the issues to discuss. And a second one is rate design. Because we haven't changed rates for a long time, we have not revisited rate design issues. And we do have changes going on in our county, including particularly the growth of second homes, some use of distributed generation, although we haven't seen as much of that here as other utilities have. We can expect that more of it will be coming our way. Those require some more thought about particularly what the fixed charges are that we charge customers, because if you're not getting much out of your volumetric charge because you're not selling as much energy, second homes, distributed generation, et cetera, then you need to make sure you're recovering the fixed costs in your system. So we need to review cost of service analysis and make some determinations as to whether we need to make some changes to rate design. Second big opportunity for us is we were fortunate enough through the good work of Senator Cantwell and Representative McMorris Rodgers to have a new provision in law that we are in, have the opportunity to take advantage of. Rock Island relicensing comes up in 2027, and one of the questions is, should we take advantage of the early action credit legislation, which the Congress has passed and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has taken some action already to implement. What the opportunity here is can we work with parties, interested stakeholders, to come to agreement on measures that could be taken in advance of 2027 in return for commitments to support a relicense? Previous to this law, you did not have that opportunity. You had to wait until the license went into effect to take any action that would get credit in the licensing process. So there's a quid pro quo here. Can we do something early? Can we get commitments for support that needs to be engaged? And so we're going to be looking to people in the community and other interested stakeholders who are users of the Columbia River as to whether there are actions that would merit taking action before 2027, and can we get the return from those folks as to, yes, we're willing to make commitments to support relicensing.
Steve, not a question, but a comment on that, because I think all of us commissioners are fairly aware that credit for early action ultimately would potentially manifest itself in a longer license, which would be the direct benefit to Chelan County, correct?
That's right. So under previous FERC policy, that license could be extended from anywhere from 30 years to 50 years. Based on the new policy that FERC adopted in the spring, you're pretty much confident you can get 40 years. But the question is, if you take early action, can you extend that an additional 10 years from 40 years to 50? And of course, Chelan got 43 years in the last period, something that we felt was not right, but that is what we got. So there is an opportunity here to do better than what we've done in the past. Third key issue, wholesale versus retail marketing. So historically, there has been such a huge advantage to marketing into the wholesale markets that it was tough to find an advantage to serving at retail. And in addition, our retail rates are pretty heavily subsidized. So you were giving up a sale that was making a lot of money for one that was losing a lot of money, and you can't do very much of that. Two things have changed. The wholesale market has come down substantially. And by putting in place the new high-density load rate, we now have a full cost of production rate. So we have the opportunity, because the gap is narrowed between a wholesale versus retail sale, to think about whether we want to do more to advance sales here in the county. So we'll have a conversation about what the trade-offs of that are, and there are some upsides and downsides to it. Growth. So there's been a question that with respect to whether we should have policies that focus on growth, paying the full cost of growth or a part of the cost or none of the cost. And so we wanted to engage that question as to what the views are within the county as to whether we should be encouraging growth through subsidies or not. Aesthetics. So we've had a number of folks come to us with respect to thinking about whether we should underground distribution, transmission, how we should landscape around substations. All of those things cost money. So you get a basic trade-off. Do you want rates to be as low as they could possibly be, or do you want to invest in aesthetic values? Need to get some input from the county with respect to what the preferences of our customer owners are. And then finally, question number six is the public power benefit program. So it has been generally quite successful in terms of supporting both the fiber expansion program, the Hydro Research Institute, the waiver of the parks passes fees at the state parks, and soon the investment in the Rocky Reach Discovery Center. So we now have a choice to make with respect to whether to continue the public power benefit program, and if so, generally at what level. I think the at what level is probably going to be a board decision, because it's reflective of how we're doing financially, and you make that decision as we move through time. But the fundamental question is, should we have a program? And the last time around, we solicited interest from the county of what types of things could we invest in that are consistent with our statutory mission. So we will once again be revisiting that. It's been a few years since we've done that kind of solicitation about what is their interest in terms of investing in a public power benefit program. So we'll be looking to the county to give us some input on that. Final two things that we'll cover is that while those are the six key questions, there's a heck of a lot of stuff going on here at the PUD. We have five-year business plans and five-year targets, so we don't want folks to think that that's all that's going on. We'll just include our five-year targets for those who are wondering about, well, what about my issue, what's happening with electric vehicles, or what's happening with your position on carbon policy, a variety of different things. We have targets associated with that, so we'll just include those so that people can see them, and also to think about whether they have issues that they think should be included that are not in our list of six. The process for this is phase one, which will be the context setting and establishment of the key questions. We expect to conclude that by the end of January. Phase two will be something like what we did the last time, where we went into a deep dive with people who in the county who are interested in those issues. We did last time topic teams that conducted three meetings to ask all the questions they want to ask and to try to get some recommendations from them out of that. Phase three then becomes, once you have those recommendations, to try to engage the rest of the county through survey instruments, public meetings, to see if we've captured adequately the views of people across the county. And then phase four, which we would hope to do in the summer, is a draft final plan and then a final plan. And we hope to be finished by the middle of summer sometime. That would then allow us to be able to take the output of that and be able to include it in 2020 budgets. And this plan would be for the 2020 to 2024 period. So I know, commissioners, you've heard probably a substantial portion of that before, but maybe not all of it. I do want to just pause for a moment and see if you have any feedback for us as to the approach that we're taking, anything you'd like us to amend or modify.
Yeah, at some risk of an old song, but I didn't hear a splash pad in there. But... anyway.
Let me note that specifically.
I know it's not high on the priority because the main work of revisiting mission and vision has been completed, and it's providing the guidance for strategic planning. But there is that awkward stage afterwards of redoing posters and everything throughout the. So I'll be looking forward as we enter into the next year, how that happens and when. And
yeah, to be candid, I was holding off just a little bit on that, just in case we got any feedback through this phase one process that you might want to take into account. I think in general, mission, vision, values is a board responsibility, but just in case there was something that we missed, then we'd be able to get that to you.
You know, just a comment, recognizing that the last go-around, and I'm not sure if Gary or Steve either were commissioners the last time we went through this process. That was such a robust process in my eyes, something like I've never experienced before. I'm looking forward to this next one. I think probably the people of Chelan County are too. I don't know if we can top the participation rate that we had last time, because there were several thousand people that participated last go-around, and that was great, great county input. Looking forward to it.
Sir, our goal is certainly going to be to match that. We'll see if we can exceed it even.
Other comments, questions? Thank you.
Good. Okay, so one minute to spare. I think we
there we go. In my introduction, I neglected to introduce the rest of the commission table today. Steve Wright, our general manager, acting clerk, Lisa Saunders, and our lead attorney, Eric Walquist. So we'll be looking now at number three on our agenda. Steve, I'll let you introduce that, please.
Okay, so this is a public hearing on the cryptocurrency moratorium, as well as the adoption of rates for cryptocurrency. I want to invite Lindsay Mons to the table. She will review where we're at in this process. She will not try to attempt to cover all of the things that we've covered in the 9 months now that we've been going through this process, but give you a quick overview of where we are and our plan for going forward and try to create opportunity for public comment.
All right. I have had my coffee. I could probably cover quite a bit pretty quickly. First off, I do want to note that in your copies and handouts that are available today, we had the wrong title slide in there. So this is the cryptocurrency moratorium hearing. I believe your handouts say rate. That was at our last meeting. So we will make sure that the copy that's posted on the website reflects the moratorium hearing that we're having here today. We do also have as the next item on your agenda the rate resolution. So I think that's how we got them all mixed around. So we will talk today, as I mentioned, about the moratorium approach and the next steps that would be associated with that if the board chooses to take action today. There is some sort of action required because the moratorium was just extended through today's meeting. First of all, just another snapshot at the meetings that we've had to date. At the last presentation that I gave you, it was just a long list, which is just a lot of information. This, I think, really reflects better, you know, the fact that over the last quarter or late in Q3 into Q4, we've really had the bulk of our meetings. So we've talked a lot about the rate and the moratorium itself, both with the board and with our customers, and have had received quite a bit of feedback and have taken that into account as we prepared our presentation and resolution that you have in front of you today. As far as the moratorium itself, the progress that we've made since March, addressing those unauthorized services was our first step in the process, and that's been quite quiet lately. I think that between the fees that were put in place and the cryptocurrency rates being down, we've not had much issue in that area. We've reviewed our system for capacity challenges and opportunities and performed outreach with our local municipalities to make sure that our capacity aligns with their needs and plans going forward. We've designed processes for our large loads. We've updated upfront capital charges and, as mentioned, have proposed a new rate class and rate. Last week, we posted on the website our staff report, which really summarizes all of the activity that we've had to date in this area. So just a documentation of information that's been presented before. And listening and responding to public comment, one public comment that we've received fairly often is associated with the rate and how it's so much higher than any others in the region. So I just wanted to provide for you today just a quick snapshot here of the Energy Information Administration. The federal website has available average energy prices. And so this is the 2017 average energy for commercial operations. And Washington is lightly colored. The scale is the lightest colored are the lowest rates, into the darkest colored are the highest rates. So those really range from a little over or about 7.5 cents to almost 27 cents a kilowatt hour. The rate that we've proposed to the board is about a little over 6 cents on average for a commercial type cryptocurrency operation. So just for information, customers always have the ability to look elsewhere and perhaps find lower rates in other regions. This is our cost, and we've developed this rate in an effort to cover all of our costs and risks, both financially and operationally, associated with the cryptocurrency class, as well as protect our other customers from the volatility and uncertainty that we've seen with that rate class itself. Come on. Whoa. Delayed response from the keyboard. So for the moratorium, our recommendation carries from the last discussion that we've had, which would be to, when the rate is approved, to begin reviewing the existing applications that we have from March, as well as to accept applications for account changes. Account changes really means name changes on accounts. Any change in load or location would have to wait until April. When we would propose lifting the moratorium in its entirety when that rate is effective. In the short term, existing applications or applicants, things that they can expect or what our process or plans are, is that we aim to implement our business processes here in December. So the lifting or beginning to process new applications is perhaps a little earlier than we were ready for, but we do think that we can continue to work on those business processes as engineering begins reviewing those applications. So really at this point, we're opening those files back up, taking a look at what's there and what our system can handle at this point. Later this month, along with we will be sending a letter to all those existing applicants as along with a revised application to ensure that we have consistent information for all of the applicants, as well as updated information, and really to give them an opportunity to let us know if they desire to move forward in this process. There will be an option to withdraw and request a refund of application fees if they do not choose to move forward. And for those that do continue, any application fees that were submitted previously will carry forward into the new process, even though we'll be asking for a revised application. Because each project or request is so individual, we don't have a standard timeline as far as how long will it take to connect. Those timelines will be discussed with each applicant as we work through those project plans. And there is a chance that they may need to coordinate with their municipality regarding various permitting requirements, and we don't know the timeline on that because those are the municipality's processes. So that'll impact connection as well. Because we have such an unknown as far as timelines go, and some may move faster than others, we do want to apply the new upfront capital charges to all the new cryptocurrency loads for consistency throughout that group of applicants. And in the meantime, until the new rate would be effective in April, if it's approved, they would pay the Schedule 35 rates for now, until that Schedule 36 is ready or effective. So I believe, yes, if the board has any questions, happy to take those or turn it over to you, Dennis, for comment.
Comments, questions, concerns by commissioners?
So commissioners, if I may, the
four attorneys.
Mine's more of a comment than a question, but so I was just going to propose that the cryptocurrency proposed resolution is attached and contemplated for action if the board deems it appropriate following the moratorium presentation. And perhaps it would make sense for efficiency to take comment on both the proposed resolution and the moratorium path forward at the same time so that the board can act separately, as will be required on both. The rate will require the resolution approval. There is a proposed motion in your materials relative to, in fact, you might even show it so people could comment on it, relative to what we would propose to do with the moratorium moving forward. So I was just thinking for efficiency, it might make sense to take comment on both.
Yeah, and the proposed motion is just all the words associated with the slide that has the two arrows stating that we'll begin processing those applications that we have. And accept name change on accounts. And that would happen now. And then in April, lift the moratorium in its entirety when the rate is
Where was that motion located in our pack?
It's at the very end of your presentation, following the slide that looks just like this.
So public comment would be appropriate now.
Yep. I was just waiting for the last clarification here. So we'll open this up to public comment, and people have entered since our introduction at the beginning of the meeting. Please direct your comments to the commission. It's a public hearing. The recipient of your comments needs to be the commission itself. We'd like you to, because our meetings are recorded, to state your name, your address, and we'll give you about 4 minutes. And then if there's a further comment needed following that, we'll give you a second bite of the apple, and then we'll move on to a decision-making mode. So with that being said, anyone who would like to address the commission is welcome to step up and utilize the microphone, and we'll follow suit as directed. I can be patient. No comments from commissioners, and I'm not hearing any comments from public.
Well, people are pondering whether they want to come up and speak. Maybe I'll just take a minute to ask. I do have a couple of questions. Okay. So just to confirm that this, before April 1st, we're just going to be dealing with applications that are currently on file.
Correct.
And then those applicants have had the chance to pull those applications out and be refunded if they wished. Is that correct?
Yes, they've had that opportunity so far, and we will continue to allow that as well.
But by remaining in the queue there, when the moratorium's up, then those will be the first applicants that'll be dealt with. No new applicants will begin until April 1st. Is that correct?
Okay,
that was my.
So the only clarification that I would make to that is new applicants. A new application is actually required for the other piece that Lindsay's proposing to lift, which is if we have account changes, name changes associated with things other than an increase of load or a change in location. So we would take those applications, but because it's really just an administrative matter of shifting over account responsibility, it would give us an ability to address those right away as well. Some of that's been happening and requested, and those are unfortunately caught up on the moratorium. So this would allow us to make those changes.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking those clarifying questions. If there are no further comments from the audience or from the commission, I would entertain a motion, please.
Mr. President, I would move to lift the moratorium adopted March 19, 2018, as it applies to, one, processing existing applications for service, and two, as it applies to accepting and processing applications solely for changes to account names and related information on existing cryptocurrency services and at existing cryptocurrency service locations at existing service levels effective immediately, and continue the moratorium on all other respects until April 1, 2019, at which time the moratorium will lift in all respects without further board action of the board.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the proposed moratorium motion as presented. Is there discussion? Commissioner Smith.
And I recognize we didn't have any public comment today, but I really feel compelled to once again look at the wall and the tagline that we've had on our wall now for several years, the best for the most for the longest. And this motion that has been presented to us, to me, speaks directly to what I attempt as a commissioner to achieve for all of the residents of Chelan County, recognizing that there's a pretty significant shift for a few current cryptocurrency miners, and recognizing the challenge that they face as a result of that. I'm not without sympathy for the change that incurs, but you know, keep coming back to my decision-making thought process needing to be what's in the best interest for the most people for the longest period of time. And so that's why I made the motion.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Any other comment?
I'd like to.
Yes, Commissioner Arsenault. No.
And I've gone on record now for months, if not well over a year, about saying that the moratorium and the cryptocurrency rates that are under discussion are not aimed at preventing, stifling any kind of cryptocurrency, blockchain-type technology. That's not the intent. It's not the desire. But there, when you're a commissioner, risk management is a key consideration. And we're really watching out, as Commissioner Smith said, for all residents in the county and for the welfare of all those residents. We've been entrusted with fiduciary responsibility of this wonderful gift of hydroelectric power that we have in this county, and the rates that we're able to charge as a result of our hydro projects. And so as we move forward and make considerations, rate adjustments, et cetera, it's based with that thought in mind, is protecting the value that each and every resident of Chelan County that is a ratepayer shares with us and what we've been entrusted to protect for them. So we're not singling out an industry. We're not singling out a technology. We're not singling out a currency. We're simply doing risk management and risk mitigation on behalf of all the residents of the county. So I want to make that really clear. Once again, like I said, I've been on record for well over a year that is where I'm coming from as we look at the whole concept of rates focused on high usage and constant usage, something that this initial infrastructure system in Chelan County was not built to handle and would take a great deal of money to build it in a way that it could handle it in a large manner. So it's really important to go on record and to point out the fact that what we're really doing is being respectful of all of the residents and what they've entrusted us with. And we're also trying to look for ways to make it possible for cryptocurrency and high loads to exist in our county. And so we're looking for balance, and balance is allows both to coexist. Our low rates, the residents' expectation of the fiduciary responsibility they've given to us, but also this new technology, whether it's blockchain, whether it's cryptocurrency, or something we don't even know exists yet that is possibly coming down the pike. And that part's exciting because we don't know what it is. I was on KPQ, and I made a point of saying that when I was a kid, my mom wouldn't buy a microwave because she thought it would kill us all. And look where microwaves are today. So I embrace the potential of what blockchain, cryptocurrency, call it what you want, might be in the future. But I have to do it in a way that protects what we have. So we found a potential path forward for blockchain and cryptocurrency. And the one thing I want to make really clear is my background is in investments. And I understand that blockchain has a value. And it was $20,000, and today it's $3,800. So the other part of me says, I don't want to guarantee a raw material cost on the downside so that somebody can have all the profit on the upside. So I'm sensitive to that factor as well as we go forward. So you can see, at least this commissioner, and I don't want to speak for all my fellow commissioners, but I believe them as well, have put a great deal of thought into cryptocurrency and blockchain technology and high loads. This just wasn't something that we took for granted. We thought about it very carefully going forward, and we want to try to find a path forward for both. So I just wanted to go on record as saying that once again, that in many ways I support new technology, but I do it from a risk management standpoint. So thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Dennis, I just have one closing statement. This has been an interesting ride. A lot of learning that has taken place. And I want to thank staff for their patience and their hard work. This has taken a tremendous amount of time in this utility's effort to get to where we're at today. And there's been a cost to that. There are things that we've not been able to get done because a lot of effort has been put into this. So I haven't lost track of that. I appreciate that. And I'm excited to be able to move forward. But as with anything, I want to relate this back to our human performance initiative, that you attempt things, you learn from them, you adjust, you redo, you get better, and you continue that learning. And this is an area that has been a good example of that, and I appreciate the work of our staff and our general manager. And so just wanted to make that comment.
Okay. That being said, generally, we follow Robert's Rules of Orders, at least approximately. The president generally does not cast a ballot. It's the president's responsibility to elicit opportunity for my fellow commissioners to have their opportunity to voice their opinion and speak to that opinion. But due to the gravity of the importance of this motion, I will be voting today. So with that being said, if there's no further discussion, those in favor of the proposed motion as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Leslie, thank you.
So, the commissioners, the next order of business would be to actually act on the resolution.
Okay.
Resolution number 4.
Correct.
I move forward a resolution establishing a new rate schedule and a new rate for electricity service to cryptocurrency processing and blockchain processing and similar loads.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for a resolution establishing a new rate schedule and new rate for electricity services to cryptocurrency processing and blockchain processing and similar loads. Is there discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion is carried.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you. Thank you. Lindsay, thank you very much. We are to our second public hearing.
We are to our second public hearing, that's right. So this is to discuss the purchase and sale agreement for the Horan property and for the CTC condominium units that we own, the sale of those. A public hearing specifically because we are surplusing property around the sale of those condominium units. Again, this is an issue that the board has discussed extensively in the past. So we won't be going through all of the elements of the analysis that we've done, et cetera, but just focusing on the action that we're looking at today. Dan Frazier will present for us.
Good morning, Commissioners. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. Here today to present to you both a public hearing and a resolution. The public hearing is for declaration of surplus property in the Confluence Technology Center. There's a statutory process we must follow when we surplus any property. It's governed by RCW 3933020. And we've gone through the first steps, the first four steps there. The commission at the last meeting set the public hearing. We published a display ad. It was you have to between 10 and 25 days prior to the hearing, which was done. Press release was issued on the day of the last meeting and the establishment of the public hearing. That was complete, and we received no public comment directly on the resolution or on the surplusing itself. We have received public comment on the overall facilities plan. So the last two items are to hold the public hearing and then declare the property surplus after the public hearing. So to look at what we're contemplating for surplus, it's units LL1 and 201. If you notice the two outlined areas, these are on the lower level and the second floor. They house various district operations, including information technology. And these are all part of that larger suite of agreements that we'll be considering under the resolution. Part of that process was to sell these two units to the port, and so that would be the disposition if these are declared surplus to include these in the purchase and sale agreements that would be before the board after this action. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to entertain those.
This may be like the last issue appropriate to go ahead and talk about the resolution as well before going to public comment so that we are able to talk about the combination of the two because they're so interwoven, it's difficult to separate them. Okay.
Well, then we'll discuss the resolution. And Patrick Jones is here from the port if we do have any questions of the port. The resolution itself, it actually has two sections, main sections. The first section is declaring the CTC units as surplus. The rest of the agreement, the section two of the agreement or of the resolution, covers the nine remaining agreements of the total suite of the total term sheet agreements as we discussed them early on. So they are the purchase and sale agreement of the Horan property, the purchase and sale agreement of the CTC condos. So that's the exchange of the two properties. The next is the approval of a lease agreement in the CTC condo units, and this is these are the units that we currently are occupying and we would need to continue to occupy, so we lease those back. There's also a priority use agreement for the video conference center, which would function as effectively an auditorium for the PUD should we decide to move to the old station area. There's three options for eventual. Provides the flexibility that we need in this situation. The first option is for the port to buy back the Horan property should we decide not to develop it, or if we just wait too darn long and they want us to sell that back to them. There's a 10-year term for that. And then approval of the port option to purchase a portion or all of the headquarters or Holly Street properties are another option. And then the third option is for the PUD to purchase the IB number 5 and IB number 6 properties, which are adjoining the properties, the Horan properties, actually across the street on Old Station Road, but they adjoin the northernmost of those properties, and that is really been identified as our future expansion space if we ever should need to. That would be nice to be able to get that. Finally, the CTC high-density load exception agreement, and that is for the ability for the CTC to continue to have their high-density load operations in there should their current tenant leave. And then finally, there's an approval of an irrigation system agreement, and this is part of the purchase and sale agreement is the acquisition of 2 shares of Wenatchee Reclamation District water, and so we need to have an irrigation system agreement to provide the port's ability to deliver water to the property for our use. So that would be part of that. So those are all the pieces. As you recall, there were 2 other agreements that were executed, one by the board on October 1st, which was the lease of IB5, and the other was a temporary access agreement. And that makes up the 11 agreements total in this process. So with that, that's the explanation of the resolution itself, and there is a next steps depending on the board's action today that I'll take you through.
Can I just add one thing real quick? I appreciate Pat Jones brought to my attention on Friday that by moving it forward with these agreements, there's one element of the term sheet that is not included in the agreements, and that's the question of establishing a redevelopment fund that the PUD would plenish that would be used to make investments in these facilities with the intent of being able to improve the viability of a sale and enhance the return that the PUD would get. Because it's in the term sheet, and it could be argued that the term sheet expires once these agreements go into effect, the question arises as to do we retain our commitment that we had made to put in place the redevelopment fund. So a letter has been drafted that would reiterate that commitment, just say, yes, we remain committed to the idea of a redevelopment fund. The timing for that, really, for establishing that comes around once we better understand the work that would come out of the interlocal agreement, where we see the results from the architect consultant about what some of the options are. Because it's pretty hard to figure out so how much money goes into the fund without knowing what kinds of things are on the table. But we are committed to this whole concept of redevelopment and wanted to make that available through a letter from me to the port that they can use as well for their discussions when the port takes us up tomorrow.
Commissioners?
It's somewhat like a broken record for those listening to the recording, but we're there's a whole lot of agreements here that we're not asking a lot of questions about, but I don't know how many months or years we've been discussing the various aspects of this. So for anybody listening to this recording, please don't calculate that our lack of questions means lack of interest. Absolutely not. We appreciate the effort that our staff and that the port and the everybody has gone through for literally months, if not years, in arriving at this. And this is just one step, a first step in evaluating whether or not this will all work. And we understand that clearly. So there's no done deal yet in terms of moving all of our facilities somewhere in Old Station.
I definitely appreciate that comment. We've had several inquiries about what's the decision-making process look like, and I think Commissioner Arsenault and I were on the radio at KPQ last week, and Commissioner Bowles and I were also always trying to reiterate that this is preserving options, and that's the way it's couched. This is a way to keep the options open to test some of the assumptions that we made during the process. Looking at Lindsay's timeline, I think we could do the same. I may need another sheet to see how many times we've been back to the board on all these aspects over the last 4 years. And so it's definitely a lot of effort. There have been a lot of questions answered. So I appreciate that.
Would like to add that one of the public comments that we received was a question about can we understand better the analysis? And I just say that we remain available to anyone in the county that wants to come in and understand the analysis that we've done. and that we will make sure that there's an opportunity for that to occur prior to any decision by the board, which we expect is at least months away.
So prior to entertaining a motion, opportunity for public comment? Pat Jones, please.
Commissioners, good morning. Pat Jones, I'm the executive director of the Port of Chelan County. And as usual, you've been well served by your staff in getting a very complete briefing on this proposed deal, two purchase and sale agreements, as well as the interlocal agreement between the port, the PUD, and the city. My port commission was briefed on the proposals 2 weeks ago. And I'm here a little bit presumptuously to say I believe the Port Commission fully supports the purchase and sale agreements and the interlocals that are before you. So I'd like to recognize and thank the people I've worked with for the past 2 years to get to this point. This is a complicated piece of work. I think it's a balanced deal. And I think it serves the citizens of the county who we all work for. So commend the agreement to you. Thank your staff. Steve mentioned that collaboration is one of those key values that you're going to be incorporating into your plan moving forward. I think this sets a great basis for future collaboration between the port and the PUD around economic diversification and bringing good economic health throughout the county. So thank you, and special thanks to my colleague here, Dan Frazier. He's been through it all and has been a real workhorse throughout the process, and I think we came up with a very fair agreement. So thank you. Happy to take questions.
And thank you, Pat, for your diligence in helping guide this from the port perspective. And I just, a total side note, your new construction out at the Cashmere Mill site is causing sleepy Cashmere to have quite the conversations in the coffee shop about speculation of what's happening out there. So,
excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you.
Comments? I guess one just kind of off the wall. The when I look at the crypto decision this morning and this particular decision that we're looking at, the gestation period of an elephant is quite long and arduous, and but shorter than either of these two processes. So, having said that, I would entertain a motion.
So, and Commissioner, I would say for convenience, you may combine your motions into surplusing the CTC parcels as well as approving the resolution that's before you, if that's your inclination.
The actual surplus is a part of the resolution. So.
Mm-hmm. Resolution 6,
even better.
That's correct.
No, because Dan just reminded me that it's included in the resolution.
Okay.
So for simplicity, a person could move the adoption of resolution number 6?
One could.
Is there a second? Please, Randy.
I will do so. I move the adoption of resolution number 6.
I second.
Been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 6 as presented. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Pat, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dan?
What time's your meeting?
Thank you.
Please do.
What time?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
And will this be the first item up, do you know?
I might forego my speech about our future strategic planning. Joking aside, Steve, yeah. Great. I'll be there. Thank you, Pat. So as I mentioned, there is a kind of next step slide so that we can see what is happening moving forward. So as Mr. Jones mentioned, the Port Commission will contemplate these same agreements tomorrow. And they are on their agenda, all of the same agreements, except they have the interlocal agreement on as part of theirs. The interlocal agreement as in that third bullet down there, is actually being executed at the PUD under our existing delegation. So the way these get executed and signed, both purchase and sale agreements will be signed immediately, but all the other agreements are all subordinate agreements to those purchase and sale agreements. Many of them have to wait until feasibility is complete, which would gives us until the end of January we'll be working on feasibility. There is an option to extend closing up until the end of February if need be. We've been working on due diligence since August, so I don't see a real reason why we would have to go any further than the end of January. And again, the interlocal, and we actually are working on the work with the group, the core team of the court, the city, and the PUD, along with our two key stakeholders, the Wenatchee Downtown Association and the Chamber, and we're in the selection process right now. We've shortlisted consultants to help us with that redevelopment planning process here at the Fifth Street campus, so that's underway. And then we'll be coming back with a lot of outreach over the next several months. Steve and I are working on a presentation or a PowerPoint that can be used for a lot of different ways to engage the public concerning this deal, all the way from what the options are and how it would work. And there are still several options on the table. So we'll be working on that over the next several months. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And please convey our appreciation to staff that supported this process all the way through and the commitment and the endeavor. Well done.
I appreciate it. And I do want to give a shout out. They are here, I think, still. Vicki Griffin and Karen Wiggum have been huge, huge part of this. Their dedication to seeing these agreements through was second to none. It was a lot of time, but it's a very complex deal, as Pat said. And also to Pete at Ogden Murphy Wallace. He's been great to work with, too. So,
yeah, good people, good processes, good result. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies.
Number seven.
All right, so this is a resolution approving the issuance of a request for proposal for advanced metering infrastructure, AMI system, and authorizing the general manager of the district to publish notice inviting sealed proposals for the AMI system project. Mark O'Brien will be presenting.
Morning, commissioners.
Morning, Mark.
Mark O'Brien, project manager
for
utility services. Again, I was here the last board meeting to give you an overview of the process we're going through to gear up and issue a RFP for a AMI system, advanced metering infrastructure system. Today, I just wanted to quickly review kind of the timeline going forward and would note that this resolution is required per Resolution 17-14215, which requires staff to come to the commission and request approval to issue an RFP in the event we expect it to exceed $3 million. We do expect this one to exceed that. But as far as the timeline going forward, assuming we do get board approval to plan to issue the RFP, we would have that shortly after the holidays. We would issue that RFP. That RFP would be on the street from 4 to 8 weeks. We would then move to evaluate those responses from the various vendors. Identify a preferred vendor, in middle of next year, and then work to establish a contract with that vendor or vendors of that proposal. I would note that the current project that I'm managing is the implementation of a new billing system and a meter data management system that's anticipated to go live at the end of Q3 next year, at which time we hope to have this project follow that one. A lot of the same people will be engaged in this project. We would initiate some proof of concept, some initial phases related to an AMI solution at the end of next year into 2020. And then once that we have confirmed and accepted that system, we would move to fully deploy in 2020, 2021 timeframe. We're currently anticipating an 18 to 24 month window to fully deploy that system. Again, that would be still based upon contract negotiations with whatever solution we do select next year. So with that, open it for any questions and related to this resolution.
Questions? Commissioners, your thoughts? Again, I'd like to reiterate what Commissioner Smith has said earlier, that sometimes there's the appearance that the commission is fairly silent. But again, this is another project that we've had a long period of time to consider, and it's time to bring the this to a conclusion.
Yeah, and I would just add, it's been probably close to a decade. The district has been reviewing and
this is even slower than
implementing various aspects of this. I would add, too, it is commented on this slide, but in regards to some customer feedback, one of the key aspects is incorporating an opt-out policy with whatever solution. It'll be dependent upon the solution that we select on what options are available, but would note that that's also part of that timeline.
Yeah.
I can't help believe or not believe that the length of time actually works to our advantage with the changes in improvements in technology, and I'm looking forward to seeing the results of this RFP when they come back.
Yeah, and so is staff. And so that is a good point. Technologies have matured, have dealt with cybersecurity-related issues, et cetera, and so we're coming in at a pretty good time, I think, with some good solutions out there.
Yeah. At some risk of poking Kelly Boyd unfairly, I just wanted to note that once Mark moved into a different area, we have a one-page slide. Love you, man. So, I haven't been laying in wait for that. It was just too good to pass. Is there a motion, please?
There's nobody here. So.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Comments? Probably lots of comments. She'll be right back.
She's going to revise her presentation.
<That's right. laughs> So let's go ahead and take a motion, please.
I'll make a motion. Item number 7, a resolution approving the issuance of a request for proposal for advanced metering infrastructure, often referred to as AMI system, and authorizing the general manager of the district to publish notice inviting sealed proposals for the AMI system project.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept a resolution approving the issuance of a request for proposal for the advanced metering system, AMI, and authorizing the general manager of the district to publish notice inviting sealed proposals for the AMI system project. Is there any further discussion? Mr. Rosano.
I would just like to reiterate something that was said once already during this presentation, but I think is warrants being repeated, and that is that there will be an opt-out feature for the AMI. We have heard from some folks that they're not as willing to embrace this technology, and so we have provided an exit ramp for those folks through the opt-out. So I think it's important to mention that once again and really drive that point home that both staff and commission has given this a great deal of thought and provided what we feel is a fair exit strategy for those individuals that are not willing to embrace the AMI.
And staff has the assignment clearly to develop the specifics of that. We'll be bringing that to you next year. Good.
So that being said, those in favor of the motion as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Item 8.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
This is a resolution approving the 2019 district budgets for the fiber network, water, wastewater, and integrated electric, distribution, transmission, Columbia River, Rock Island Hydroelectric, Lake Chelan Hydroelectric, Rocky Reach Hydroelectric Systems, Treasury Services, Internal Service Systems, and Financing Facilities Business Line. Of course, this is the 2019 budget that we've spent months now talking about.
It's also when our commission president gets his comeuppance.
It is. One-page presentation. I was going to share that, you know, please don't take my Kelly back.
Poor Kelly.
Actually, it goes back quite a while.
So we want to welcome Craig Koontz to make this presentation.
Good morning, Commissioners. Craig Koontz, Manager of Strategic Financial Planning. I would note, at the direction of Kelly Boyd, I have this slide is intended just to show the Commission that we had our two public hearings, and the last one was on November 19th, with a more detailed presentation, and there has been no material changes, actually no within rounding. So the total expenditures that we have in the proposed 2019 budget are the same that was presented on November 19th. And it's in the supporting documentation tied to the resolution and the budget summary. And with that, I'll open up to any questions or comments.
Just a note, Craig, if you look at the second to the bottom line where it talks about total expenditures and debt reduction, to the far right is 109%. And I think it's important. I can clearly remember had we come to the had the staff brought to the commission a 9% essentially increase, it would have caused a little bit of shuddering taking place. But I think there's the realization built in here that we all understand that much of the increase is what we're trying to do in terms of asset management and the rebuilding of our assets. And there's certainly a warranted percentage based on that item alone.
Yeah, that's correct. And I would also point out it's also the continuation of our debt reduction strategy as part of that as well. It's quite of an increase compared to what we had in 2018. So it's not only investing in the assets, it's continuing with the debt reduction strategy.
And I think those two things are important to point out.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. And really, I do appreciate it. comments, questions, commissioners? Motion?
I would move approval of Resolution 8.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept Resolution 8 as presented. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Craig, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to all of you for tolerating inadequate humor. Item 9.
So we have an election.
Are we going to cover fiber expansion? Is that?
We could do that. If you'd like to, that was under managed items, but we actually could do that now if it's your interest to do so.
No, I was just wanting to know where it fit because I know there are people that are listening specifically for that. So we'll catch it under manager items then.
Yes, although candidly, we're so far ahead of schedule at the moment that it's possible we're going to get to that this morning.
Perfect. So. All right, thank you. Thanks.
So we have an election update and pre-legislative update. Tracy Gallant, Sean Seaman are going to present.
I don't know if I want to bring up the PowerPoint slides or not. I can get it down to one slide. You give me a couple minutes here.
As long as it's accompanied with humor, we can get through it.
All right, we'll do what we can.
All right.
We'll just go fast. Tracy Hunt, Director of External Affairs.
And Sean Seaman with External Affairs.
So we're going to cover a little midterm election summary. Federal and state level, as well as the 2019 legislative session coming up with the implications from the elections, what our legislative focus is or what we think the legislative focus will be for folks, and then our specific issues. So we've all heard, but a lot of what's been discussed is the high turnout. This was second only 1970, I saw in the paper. So a great deal of turnout for Chelan County. As you already, I'm sure, know, the House Republicans lost the majority. It's now 234 to 199, with two races still being counted, not called. The Senate increase was went from 51 to 53 for the Republicans, and we have a new 8th District Representative, Dr. Kim Schreier. Might impact us as we're back and forth. Senator Cantwell has had some discussions or appears to be making some waves about leaving energy and possibly going to commerce. So we'll keep an eye on that, what it may mean for us. No matter what, we will obviously stay in contact with the senator's office. So at the state level, mostly, you know, the high voter engagement. Voters still don't like taxes, is what we're seeing. The carbon initiative, 1631, the carbon fee lost 56 to 44%. And then there was also a ban on new local soda taxes passed, 55 to 45. So kind of a theme there with the taxes.
So at the state level, similar to what was going on federally, there was a greater gains by the Democrats. Numbers obviously jumped a bit, a couple more seats in the Senate and significant seats, a gain of 7 seats in the House. So, but more interesting going forward with, we'll talk a little bit what's going on with the committee assignments, but this the session right now, this next one, it's the biennium, as you know, and we're in the first half of that biennium, so it's a long session. It'll start the 14th of January and go into late April, and it's very likely, because it's a budget year, that we'll see special sessions. So how many? Well, it'll be one or two. I think with the control of the both chambers, it's likely they can get through it quicker, but it's still likely that the budget year is going to drive special sessions, but there'll be a desire and a push to get through on time. So we're still waiting on committee structures. We've actually, over the weekend, have seen what those structures are starting to look like in the Senate and the House. And there's some, the Senate looks like it's going to remain somewhat similar from where we've been with the Energy and Environment, Senate having an Energy and Environment Committee. The House, though, it looks like the House Committee that had Energy and Telecom might be breaking up, and Energy might be going to a new committee called Energy and Environment. Not sure what the chairmanships will look like. That hasn't been decided. We just saw this over the weekend that the House committee structures are changing. So when we know those assignments, then we will get that out to you all and to others at the PUD.
Sean, does that mean Telecom would be its own committee?
It'd be under Technology Committee is the way the structure of that particular committee is being structured. So it won't be on its own. It could be Economic development and along with technology. That's where that should reside. Thank you. We did also get note that Speaker Chop has said he will not run next year, so he's going to has one more year in the speakership, and that'll be a big change. He's been in the speaker's position for many years at this point.
Well, he's not going to run for re-election?
No, he's just not going to be the speaker.
So he'll because you said one more year, and
Right. He still has 2 years left.
Okay.
Haven't been after this year, but one more year as speaker. And I think his intent was to allow somebody to transition into that position, be there to help.
Any rumors on replacement?
For the Speaker Chop?
Mm-hmm.
Not at this point.
Yeah.
So our focus, the state's focus, we've been hearing that mental health and education are still out there as issues of concern. The culvert replacement, and this is the case that in which you went to the Supreme Court and was basically brought back down saying that the state has an obligation to replace these culverts. It's a multi-billion dollar effort over years that it'll take to fix. The culvert replacement, again, is related to Salmon Passage, and this was a court case here with the tribe brought forward years ago. Again, capital and operating budgets will be a focus this year. Forest health, wildfires, you've probably seen that Commissioner Franz has asked for, I think, $55 million to deal with forest issues, fire and forest health.
$55 million is a lot of leaf rakes.
A lot of
leaf rakes.
Leaf rakes.
Anyway, just on the wildfire issue, just a bad joke.
Duly noted.
Some of us understand your humor.
Other issues, I said, we're still waiting for the shift of the based on these gains. And this is the case. This case is who are going to be our committee chairs. We think we did see, for instance, the one for the Senate Energy Committee that there was a rumor that Senator Carlisle might be moving off, but it looks like he's going to remain as the chair of the Senate Energy Environment Committee. So for us, as it seems like the same list, just another year, but the broadband office is fairly new, but broadband funding isn't in this case. There's an effort to create a new broadband office with some funding. The current levels have been around $25 million a year for 4 years, but this would establish an office. I think there had been one in years past. This would be bring that back, bring an office back to focus on broadband, particularly rural, but broadband deployment throughout the state. And within that would be our safe harbor provision that we'd want to see. We've talked about forest health and wildfire, bid limits. This has been discussed at WAFPUTA. This is to allow PUDs to have a little more flexibility on their spending before they would have to go out to competitive bids. The early retirement exemption is an issue that has been brought forward by WAPUTA to allow those who retire under the certain 2008 rules that if you left retirement under these rules from under PERS, you could not go back and work with any organization and it was part of a PERS system. This would look for a short-term exemption particularly for utilities because of the need to bring back trained people, experienced people for at least a short period of time. Electric vehicles will be back. Net metering, again, is an issue related to increasing the net metering levels is the primary point. And then carbon. And carbon's, again, it's here, particularly with the defeat of 1631, carbon issues will be back on the table.
Sean, if I could interrupt for one moment. The forest wildfire issue, I think, is important. The original WAPUTA work plan was that this would be a year of education. And we've advanced that now. Managers will be proposing that we move this to a year of seeking legislation to address the liability issues associated with forest wildfires. Certainly the California events have caught our attention, and we think caught many people's attention. I really want to give credit to Eric here. He has done an incredible job in the last couple of months of moving that process along, of defining specifically what it is that is a problem and what it is that could make a difference, and crafting language to allow us to actually be able to put something in play. And there has been some good work with the Department of Natural Resources, so we feel like there's an opportunity here that we began to see in the summer, but it seems to be becoming more viable now. So I think we've got a chance here of getting something done we didn't think even a few months ago that could happen in this session.
So I just would say thanks, Steve, but it's a whole team of internal stakeholders that have been helping. Mark Mullins, Ron Gibbs, Charles, a good number of folks have been involved in the effort.
So I'm going to touch briefly on this, what's going on statewide with carbon. It will be a big year for carbon. Our energy in particular, again, that was stated. We heard that from various House and Senate members in the state that carbon will be an issue for us, as will clean energy. What's interesting is this was some notes that were brought for us from Matt Storwalt, and I think give him credit for this, providing some of these talking points. That the second bullet there about many lawmakers differentiate between their taxpayers and our ratepayers. I think this becomes clear when they're talking about taxpayers were turning down these tax increases, but they look at these ratepayers a little differently, and that's why we're focusing. You see these focus on energy bills because it's an impact to ratepayers as opposed to the taxpayer. The third bullet. Yet 1631 makes it difficult for lawmakers, again, to talk economy-wide, meaning the tax was across the whole economy. Instead of looking at fuel taxes and energy taxes and taxes on energy related to carbon, they may be looking at these subsections, clean energy. We've talked about a clean energy legislation. There could be a low-carbon fuel standard bill, something that's more sector-specific, and they sort of break it apart as opposed to one big economy-wide. So that's possible this session. The governor has stated in the past his desires for some climate change initiatives and energy issues. So we do expect that we will see those, and have seen drafts already through the House and the Senate for clean energy. And we've also seen conversations out of the House around low-carbon fuel standards. No draft legislation on the low carbon, just the concept that's been out there over the interim.
So I wanted to hit just a second on what we've been doing and what we continue to do on this carbon discussion. So last year, we worked with Public Generating Pool to develop a model that basically you could input into it concepts, policies, and it would tell you at the other end what the impacts would be to carbon, how much that carbon reduction would cost, and what the impacts of reliability would be. So policy in, carbon, reliability, and costs come out. That was very helpful. We shared that with a number of stakeholders, gave a great deal of insights as to what was important to utilities and others. And one of the things that came out of that was the reliability component was an indicator, but it didn't have a lot of depth. It's obviously very important what these policies do to reliability. So this year, we, again, with Public Generating Pool and several others, took a deeper dive into the reliability component, again, working with E3. And so we're in the midst right now of taking the results of this latest reliability look and translating that into something that we can convey to policyholders and decision makers. And we'll be back here with you also to share when that report information becomes more digestible, because it's some pretty thick stuff. So that's coming up. So what that does is it's positioning us and other PGP members to really be a contribute to the discussion from a technical basis. Rather than we feel this or think this, it's we actually have some information, credible information, to share with policy folks as these decisions get discussed. So kind of our framework, our carbon goal, seeking an approach to reducing carbon that is least cost, continues to place value on existing GHG-free resources. We are investing lots of money in existing resources, and they need to be valued. And maintains or improves our reliability. So those are going to be our focus points going forward.
Tracy, I just add, we've really built a coalition here. So if you go back a year prior to this, we funded the initial study, put about $25,000 to get the idea going. That turned into a PGP study, so we now had 10, and we've added one other utility, public utility. And the reliability study, we've actually added now Puget, Northwestern, and Avista as co-sponsors of that. So we've been building a coalition towards this idea of focusing on what's a least cost approach to greenhouse gas emissions reduction, and then being able to use that as a platform for discussions in the legislative arena, believing that if you bring facts to the table, it can make a difference.
My favorite slide.
Question. There's a conference held in a couple of weeks called the Rewire Conference. Just got notification of that. It looks like an interesting agenda. Is that hold value for commissioners to attend?
Well, I did look at the agenda, and due to timing, I decided myself I wouldn't be attending, but it was broader than energy, quite a bit broader than energy this time, so I'd have to take another look at that agenda and get back to you.
Yeah.
And we'll take a look at it.
So one day over, the person could probably fly over and back the same day.
Yeah, it's at the Red Lion in SeaTac, so it's designed to be...
Sheraton or Hilton, I don't think, I'm not sure which one. Yeah.
But it's a walking distance or a short distance from the airport. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other questions?
Great.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Off for another legislative year shortly.
That's right.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. Is Tim Shelton still conferencing with the Republicans?
Yes, unless you heard something.
The working assumption is that he'll still caucus until we hear otherwise.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next up we wanted to cover... So we talked about what the message would be in strategic planning. We want to talk a little bit about the process that we're planning to use, the outreach process. So with particularly focusing on this phase one element. So Justin's going to be discussing that. Welcome,
Justin Erickson.
Good morning. Okay, Justin Erickson, Managing Director for District Services. Look forward to diving a little deeper with you this morning on how we're going to conduct our outreach and what the overall schedule is. I appreciate your feedback. So we're going to provide you a high-level overview of the process, seek your general concurrence, of course, address any comments or concerns that you have. And as General Manager Wright mentioned this morning, we're going to jump into this outreach process actually starting next week with a presentation before the Cashmere City Council. So we're ready to go effective this presentation and your concurrence. Of course, outreach is critically important to the district. We even have an adopted outreach standard that addresses key principles. I won't read through those through each of those, but suffice to say that we value transparency and openness. We want people, when they go through this process, to understand that we're very genuine in our desire for their feedback. We're going to listen, and we're going to follow through in a considerate way. And so, just like last time, we'll be using these core principles moving forward. We're going to adopt the positive attributes that we utilized last time. So we're going to continue the process of working with our strategy partners, going to look at a topic team approach to answer the key strategic questions that were mentioned earlier. And we're going to engage effectively with customer owners and the general public as we go forward. And like last time, we're also going to incorporate the employees, our core asset. I'll dive deeper into each of these now. Strategy partners, you may recall, they consist of key community partners. They have been with us since 2013, since the last planning process, and they've been with us since adoption. And so every year, they're provided at least once annually an update on strategic plan implementation and our planning efforts. And so we're going to continue that consistency. They provide an important community perspective and provide important feedback to you and to us. And individual members, if they have a particular area of interest and they want to hone in on that, they'll be able to serve on a topic team as well. So they can kind of pick their level of involvement, a high-level strategy partner, or they can get into the nuances as part of a topic team as well. Topic teams are comprised of you as commissioners, if you have an interest, our staff, stakeholders, and members of the general public. Mentioned earlier, this is going to be reinstituted for the 2019 update. Of course, a little bit different approach this time with us looking at key strategic questions versus more general topical teams. We have six key strategic questions. We're not sure if we're necessarily going to have six topic teams. We're still kind of formulating that approach, but we know we'll have several, and that this will, and that each team will be able to engage in a customized way with the team and with the public. When we get to general outreach methods, of course, going to have a good presence on the web. We're going to have a detailed context document, which is in the final stages of preparation. And we know that we have to really approach this maybe even a little bit differently when it comes to digital and social media, because those forms of communication have increased substantially even from 2013 and 2014. And so with that, we're going to be looking at digital video content and how we can engage in that way. And of course, we do this today, and we've done this for quite a while. But we really want to take a fresh look at it as in terms of our engagement through this process. For those customer owners that prefer traditional methods of engagement, such as printed or handwritten surveys, where they have an opportunity to complete it through the mail, they will still have that opportunity through this process as well. So we're not going to leave anybody out of this effort. And, of course, we will do all of our traditional and outreach methods, whether that be traditional print, or radio, and open houses, presentations, etc. As I mentioned, since 2013, there's been even a higher emphasis placed on the importance of digital media. You can see there the penetration rates for YouTube and Facebook at well over 73% for YouTube, 68% for Facebook, and others have increased significantly since 2013. We know that about 3/4 of Americans have a smartphone, and so we're going to have to be cognizant of that as we try to ensure that we have engagement with the public. Employees will be engaged throughout this process. We will have an opportunity to meet with them through general manager forums, through team meetings, through survey instruments, and through the topic team effort that I mentioned previously. So looking at the general schedule, I'm going to begin this outreach, kind of setting the stage, talking about the context and the key strategic questions in December and January. We will look at probably having some type of visual preference survey and kind of get to this question of infrastructure aesthetics and potential impacts on rates in January and February. Be prepared to actually launch the website and some of the initial digital video content in January as well. And then have a kickoff event, probably be a little bit smaller scale than last time. This is a more condensed process, but we will have some type of event kickoff in early February, likely, where we'll invite public, strategy partners, you as board members, and stakeholders. And then, much like the previous strategic planning process, topic team meetings, we anticipate about up to three meetings with each strategic question. And so those would occur over a 4 to 5 month process. And then at some point, we'll kind of take a pause and develop through that effort, through those initial meetings, the customer owner survey document will be finalized. We'll have an opportunity to engage public sentiment and then reconvene as strategy partners, topic teams, and staff and kind of assess those results. And so that would provide us an opportunity then to have those final meetings in kind of May and June, finalize the draft document, provide additional opportunities for public presentations and input, and be on due course for adoption, hopefully in midsummer or so of 2019. So in summary, our outreach efforts will be substantial, inclusive, responsive, and transparent. Customer owners can select their level of involvement, their method of involvement. For some, it may be relatively minor. For others, they'll want to take a detailed examination and be a big part of the process. We have learned from our past processes, and we've incorporated those successes into this effort. We look forward to working with you to complete this effort next summer, and you will be provided regular updates as we move forward. Be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
And I'd also encourage commissioners that the last time around, commissioners provided us a fair amount of input about individuals that we should reach out to, anybody that you think would be interested in participating in this process. We'd love to get their names so we can figure out a way to get them included.
Thank you.
Yeah, I thought that was a good process, and it had, I think, yielded a good result. So I would encourage us to do either something similar or, you know, maybe more casual, but certainly support that. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So do you want to go to
one thing manager, I'd like right? to do is pick up a manager's item, the fiber work plan, because I know it's of interest to the board. And if I could, if we could do that, then actually I think we are doing so well that we could begin to pick up the afternoon business session items too. And in fact, we've brought staff in that was planning to be here this afternoon in order to be able to handle this morning. Bob Chain's going to give us an update. Sorry, I should have introduced this. Sort of left you hanging there.
Bob Chain, Director of Fiber and Telecom. Sorry to disappoint you. No PowerPoint presentation on this update. It'll be pretty short.
Safe harbor.
One of my favorite topics is the fiber expansion under the public power benefit. So if you would, I'd like to give you a very short summary of where we're going to end up in 2018 and then present to you what our proposal is for 2019. You'll recall originally we had planned 1,059 new premises in 2018 as part of the expansion program. We were expecting the end of year number to be closer to 901. There's some reasons behind that. We had four major exceptions in our 2018 construction activity that forced us to lower those numbers. Essentially, the Upper Chumstick and Middle Chumstick, Lake Wenatchee, and Merritt Canyon area, there was a number of NESC make-ready work challenges, some delays in getting some permits completed, and some issues with some private water system locates that were not timely. That was quite a deficit, but we staff put quite a bit of effort together to do some mitigation work, that is to bring additional build into the year to minimize that deficit. So we are basically 158 short from the original target, but that also meant we brought 244 new unplanned premises into 2018 to get those numbers up. So it's quite a bit of effort for staff to do that. For 2019, we're looking at a goal of 1,033 new premises in addition to the ones we're going to carry over. Those areas are going to be built in the Chelan area, specifically El Dorado Crystal View area, Rocky Point, Crystal View North Side, Spader Bay. In the INEAT area, we're talking about INEAT Way, INEAT Substation, Pine Meadows, and Lower Valley. In the Cashmere area, Steins Hill. In the Wenatchee area, Kittitas and Methow. Birch Mountain, Mount Vista area, and Birch Run. In the Leavenworth area, we're talking about the Upper Chumstick, the Middle Chumstick, Eagle Creek, Merry Canyon, and Froyne Canyon. And in the Lake Wenatchee Plain area, we're talking about Lake Wenatchee area specifically, and Snowberry Fawn, some small areas in that location. And then the Malaga Riviera. So that's basically the geographical areas of our 2019 build for the public power benefit expansion. We are working with distribution to organize the construction work for the NESC work through contractors, so that we'll probably be doing a lot better in 19 as a joint opportunity with contractors to build out to meet our expansion expectations, and along with meeting our NESC make-ready work. So that is it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Happy news.
Yeah.
To many.
True. It'll make some phone calls today much easier.
I could probably guess those areas.
I bet you could.
So well, thank you. Yeah. I would encourage you when you have those conversations. Right. One of the things that we're struggling a little bit with is that we're not seeing as much take from some of the new areas as we would have anticipated. So for those folks who've been asking for it, you should encourage them to encourage their neighbors to be signing up for the service.
Yeah. Well, and those conversations are always with a caveat that, you know, related to incidents such as fire, et cetera, that would cause us to adjust our schedule. That, you know, this is a commitment to do something, but not a promise, because we don't control all the factors. But so we always caveat that. But
absolutely,
yeah. Okay. Well done.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
Commissioners, we're at a point, I think, where we could move to the afternoon agenda, where we would go to the consent agenda, and then we're in a position to take up item 16 as well.
Okay, I would entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda with the addition of resolutions 14 and 15.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda as presented, with the addition of resolutions 14 to 15. Is there discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. So we would continue on.
So we'd like to do item 16.
Okay.
This is a resolution declaring, I'm never quite sure how to say this, is OSI Soft. Thanks. OSI Soft, Incorporated of San Leandro, California, as the sole source supplier of high visualization suite.
Good morning.
That was a mouthful.
Yeah, it
it's confusing because it's called Pi software too, and Pi doesn't stand for anything, so other than the word Pi. So I'll give you a couple key points associated with this, a little bit of background on OSI Soft. We've worked with OSI Soft on the Pi system software that's used to capture, process, and analyze the district's real-time operational data. OSI Soft is also the sole provider of all the associated software products that they provide for that software. And the district's been using that software since about 2001. We're also looking to purchase and upgrade the Pi Visualization Suite, which expands the district's current Pi toolset beyond that of our current desktop functionality. It adds web-based visualization tools and APIs to allow us to use operational data via mobile and the web. The intent of this is for internal innovations surrounding our operational data. It also allows us to better integrate our operational data with external customers or partners such as the Hydro Research Institute, and just opens up more innovative opportunities with any other external partners that want to work with our data and or push data back to us via integrations. So this resolution declares that OSI Soft is the sole supplier of the Pi system and associated products, including the Pi Visualization Suite. The Pi Visualization Suite purchase price is not to exceed $92,000 or $92,642.88. As part of that, that brings our annual support with OSI Soft and related products up from $75,357.75 to just under $92,000. And not to exceed $100,000 a year in support and maintenance.
I have a question.
Sure.
The $100,000 you just mentioned, support and maintenance, is that on top of the $92,000?
Yes. The $92,000 is the purchase of the actual Pi Visualization Suite, and that includes some of the tools we already have, but that are named user licenses and brings us to enterprise-wide license availability for that and gives us the web-based and external APIs. And then the yearly maintenance on that would go up to almost 93,000. So we license OSI software based on the number of Pi points we have, so what's at our generation and transmission facilities. And we recently just upgraded from about 15,000 points to 20,000 points. So that's how they license it. And all their products, besides the purchase price, are based on that overall licensing agreement for support and maintenance.
Commissioners, actually, we may not have addressed this issue in recent years because the change was made so long ago. But back when the original resolution approving the procurement was issued in 2001, I think, we used to use a different process for annual support services, and we would approve those ostensibly in an amount that would be budgeted annually. We don't budget to that level of detail specifically, so the change was made some years ago that we would actually move away from that as a standard practice, sort of the forward-looking whatever you budget is okay, and we would move to more of a stated amount for those recurring charges with some sort of a maximum and a limit. That's why you see it. So the roll-up number here was actually done at my request to bring forward those old method approvals that we're already spending, with the exception of the incremental new charge, into sort of our current approach and practice to things.
Thank you.
Okay. Since this is the, I think, last resolution, correct?
It is.
I would entertain a motion.
Move approval of resolution number 16.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept resolution 16 as presented. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Alex, thank you.
Thank you. Sorry.
No. Just appreciate you being here and doing the presentation.
Dennis,
yes.
Can I ask one quick question to Bob before he takes off?
Absolutely.
Regarding that budget that's built into the current budget, the build-out that's built into the budget for 2019, I know there is a communication process of
postcards being sent out. When does that happen?
There's actually a series of time intervals that we send out postcards. So once the announcement is approved or the budget's approved, we'll send out an announcement to those areas that, congratulations, you are now included in the expansion. And then we will, once the construction start, we'll send out notification, let them know of activity. And then there's a series of others, including you're coming up on the end of your opportunity to participate as a user on our system. So get with your provider as quickly as possible. I can provide you those specific timelines if you're interested, but we do have a very formal process of reaching out to our customer owners about fiber expansion.
That just helps me in case I get asked. And
sure.
I'm just curious if we're giving people Christmas gifts. And,
absolutely.
But let me ask this, make sure I understand. Those that are in the budget get notification that sometime during 2019, or does that happen to everybody, or you said that's staggered according strategic?
I'm sorry, I wasn't clear on that. We stagger that in terms of our construction activity. So in the very beginning of the year, we'll let everybody know that you are a recipient of the public power benefit bill as okay. We have defined. And then as our construction schedule moves forward for those each of those respective areas, we'll give them updates as to where we're at.
Great,
because we don't necessarily do them all at the same time.
Yeah, I like that approach. Okay, thank you.
And you have a map online that people can go to and look and see if they're included?
Yes, we will update that map to show those areas. It's not a tremendous amount of detail because some of the areas we call infill, which are literally just streets that we're filling out, and it's really hard to define that in a map. We would encourage them to call their service providers, and then the service providers, we give them specific areas that we're building so they can respond to their customers that way.
Yeah, and kind of a precursor to notification are the postcards being sent out about checking the stability of the poles.
The NESC work.
Yeah. That's kind of like a foreshadowing of things to come.
Well,
B doesn't happen.
That's right.
Yes. What we try to do is, or the process is, the year before we commit, we're out there doing a field validation to understand what's happening.
Yeah.
We're a little bit behind in that process, but we have going forward, working with distribution, Chad, and others in that group. We now have a contractor that's going to go out and do the assessment on all the poles we're going to do in the next 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
So I have a very good idea of the condition of those poles, and we'll be better at forecasting the schedules for replacement as we go
forward. Good. Well, that's good. Anything else? Bob, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Bob.
Well, I admit to being a bit surprised by the pace at which we've managed to maintain this morning. So we're now into picking up a few other things. I'd like to just suggest that I cover quickly the delegation of action items. The last meeting, we had two. One was to get you some information about the cybersecurity requirements for the AMI request for proposal. So that information, unfortunately, was forwarded to me and it sat in my email until I was brought to my attention that it was there and hadn't been forwarded to you, so it was sent to you this morning. It does include the very long list of questions that we'll be engaging vendors on. All of which helps us then in the evaluation process to make a determination about how to proceed or not. If you have any feedback on that, certainly we would welcome it now or at a future meeting. And second, there was a request with respect to whether membership in NOAANet might create a opportunity for differentiated pricing for the Network Operations Center for the fiber program, and the answer was no, and that was forwarded to you as well last week. That's it for the action items.
Okay.
I think at this point we would be up to commission items and commission travel.
Commissioner items. Commissioner travel.
Okay. I'm Lisa Sanders. Today I'm acting clerk of the board. We only have one trip left for 2018. Commissioner Arsenault will be at the annual conference for one night only on the 5th. I have Commissioners Bowles, McKenna, and Smith checking in on the 5th and out on the 7th. And I've prepared the 2019 updated to be a little brighter. If you don't like it, I'll change it. I'm not real picky about it. I thought maybe if we could, however is easiest for you, go through, and if there are any these events that we can just take off of here that aren't relevant to you, or if you don't plan on going to something, I can mark it off now, or we can just leave it and go through it as we get closer.
You can remove me from the March 28th Water Committee.
Okay.
I did have a question. You sent this out on the next page on the April 17th and 19th. You have Town Place Suites there. And when I think most of us are normally stay at the DoubleTree. I don't know what
this
what,
was the. This is where they. I put this in here because they have a room block there.
Right.
But I will make your reservations at your preferred hotel.
Yeah. Well, it's less expensive.
Yeah.
It's not terribly inconvenient. So.
Yeah, I put that there for information.
At least I will not be at the February Wapuda meeting.
Okay.
Do we need to go over early on that one, Gary?
We do.
The coffee is Thursday morning, or is it?
Let's get confirmation on.
Yeah.
On that,
we're part of the coffee service for legislators on that.
I think the day on the Hill is the 14th.
The what?
Day on the Hill, February 14th.
Yes.
And that is what day of the week? Is that
Thursday, I believe, but.
Okay.
So, I don't have a calendar.
It is.
Okay. I will probably start then going over on Tuesday, I believe. That 13th is Tuesday?
13th is Wednesday.
You do have other responsibilities.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, you do.
I have responsibilities, yeah.
You bet.
I'll be going over. The 13th, yeah, okay. Which is Tuesday.
No, 13th is Wednesday.
Okay, I'll go over the 12th, pardon me.
The 12th.
Yeah, there we go.
Is that when you want to go as well?
Or no? I don't think he needs to.
I don't think I need to.
Yeah.
13th.
No, I'll go on a 13th, yeah.
Commissioner McKenna, are you attending?
I am, but I will get back to you on when I'll go on.
Yeah. Okay, how about January? Does everyone plan to attend?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you want to arrive on the 16th?
Yeah.
And that's Wednesday, correct?
I don't have a calendar.
January.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay.
We have a method here.
March 28th, I will not be attending the Water Committee meeting.
Thank you.
Nor will I.
And neither will I.
So just Commissioner Congdon.
Yes.
Okay. Does Commissioner Bowles, do you do NWPPA?
No, that is Commissioner Congdon.
Okay. Would anyone else go to this?
NWPPA.
March?
I might. I'm the backup, so I'm yes.
Okay. Would anyone else then participate
that's,
in that?
Okay, that's no. Board thing. Okay.
No?
No.
Okay.
No.
So I'll take everyone else off. And in February in D.C., I did get rooms at the Beacon. Commissioner Smith wants to stay there. Commissioner Arsenault, I'll keep watching the Mayflower for you. Commissioner McKenna?
I think it's going to be a no for me.
Cancel?
Yes, please.
Okay. Commissioner Bowles, still no?
Still no.
Okay. And maybe maybe we should just cover this March WAPUTA meeting. Does everyone plan to attend?
Yeah.
13 through 15?
I'll be. That's when yes. I start going in on Tuesday. One moment. I think that might be the 12th.
Yes, it would be.
And everyone else go on the 13th?
13.
Yeah, 12.
Okay, whatever you like to do, we can keep going or we can hold off.
For May?
Yes.
I would be attending the annual conference.
NWPP.
You will or you will not?
I will.
Okay, thank you.
We don't have a date on that yet.
I don't.
Okay.
I also will be attending that conference.
Thank you.
Yeah, I went to put some dates in and it scheduled everybody's.
What?
So I looked the dates up. With WPPA, and I started to schedule, put it into my calendar, just, you know, my private calendar.
Oh.
Boom, it started popping up and registering, you know, doing Gary's.
I'm going.
That was nice of you.
Well, yeah, so I backed out. So nothing's
happened. Buddha president, I'm going to go to everything.
Oh, it's nice.
So do you plan on attending that?
I do.
Okay. Commissioner McKenna, you're my...
In May, yes.
Okay.
Hmm.
How about April WAPUTA meetings? Everyone attending those?
Yep.
I think Randy ought to.
Yeah.
Think he ought to?
Yeah.
On the 16th, Randy?
Yeah.
He's got the election of officers. That'd probably be a good thing for him to go to.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be there.
Yep. What about the APPA National Conference in Texas?
Yes.
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 I'm planning on it.
And Water Committee again would just be
Ann.
And Commissioner Arsenault is back up. Do you want me to keep you on those?
Not on the Water Committee, no.
What was that on?
NWPPA.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So generally, no one goes to the Water Committee except
Ann. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll just take everyone off.
But I like the fact that you've got it all on this sheet. Mm-hmm. It's very.
Oh,
helpful.
Yes. I'll
very
leave it
helpful.
On here.
Yeah.
In July WAPUTA meetings.
Which will be held in Chelan County. That's an,
the July one.
July 17 to 19. I was asked last meeting, and I agreed to it.
Okay.
And we're having discussions. It may actually, we're going to have a conversation with Pybus and the new hotel.
Oh, mm. Nice.
And the thing is, you also have easy, for meeting rooms, easy walking distance to the convention center if need be. You've got the bridge going across the railroad track, so we'll have. I'm going to need some help along with Lena at the WAPUTA. We're still in the discovery stage of what we're doing. We've asked Commissioner McKenna to potentially host one evening at his place in Leavenworth.
Wow!
And so things are floating around right now. But I just thought
we so all I can remove hotels from this. Event.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. For us, yeah.
Okay.
Mr. McKinley, I will bring the Malathion on.
That's cruel.
Commissioner, one other item. Just, I think it would be useful if you, some of you, but not more than two of you, were to attend the port meeting tomorrow. To show of support for the purchase and sale agreement. Are any of you available to do that?
Yeah, but I figure the president ought to take the lead and appoint whoever he sees. Of course, Kim Craig might have something to say about that, huh? Oh, okay.
Randy, you're going to go.
I'm available, but you know, if there's others that wish to, that's.
Anyone else choose to attend?
I could if you so wish.
I have a regional water meeting tomorrow. So
I will not. Okay. No, I can be there. But three of us can't be.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well,
okay.
Well, you can go ahead too. I don't need
to. No, I just, I'm there as a backup. So.
Oh. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
And that's 9, wasn't it?
Yeah, 9 o'clock.
So why don't we stop at July 17th?
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah, because it's past that point we're reaching,
yeah,
but don't know where.
Yeah, I think that's a good spot. Yeah, there's a lot of to be determined locations after that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Thank you. I'll get that cleaned up.
All right. Thank you. Thanks,
as far as, I know, other than the public comment session of our meeting, there's only one item left, which is the action items from this meeting. And I think we only had one, and I was having a heck of a time. I cannot remember it. So it was Tracy's presentation. And there was
Rewire.
That's what it is. Okay. To get back to you on Rewire. Thank you. And as far as I know, that was the only follow-up item.
Okay.
Did I miss anything?
No. I got an email early in the week from Rebecca related to expenditure for the paperless board equipment. And we do have budget capacity to cover those costs, so I authorize that budget item. Just want to let you know that that's been followed up on. So, well, so we're at additional public comment. Other matters before the commission?
So we would need an executive session, right?
Yeah,
I would say we could set that now, commissioners, and start it at 1 in place of the start time for the business meeting, have lunch, and reassemble for approximately 60 minutes.
Okay. So prior to our lunch break, we'll go ahead and set the expectations for our executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101I for approximately 60 minutes starting at 1 p.m. in the boardroom. With that being said, let's take our lunch break and we'll return at 1. Good afternoon, and this is Chelan County Board of Directors coming out of executive session. It is about 6 minutes to 2, and we said we'd be done by 2 o'clock, and no votes were taken, no decisions were made, and if there's no other business to come before the commission, we are adjourned.